Netcasting from Chicago, Los Angeles, and Sydney. You're listening to this week's FX Podcast from FXGuide.com.
Well, hi, and welcome to our FX Podcast from Barcamp at NAB 2009. Thanks, everyone, for being here. We appreciate it. Before we begin, I just want to take a moment to thank our sponsors for the event. Without them, we definitely could not have grown in size from 20 last year to close to 200 today. The folks at DaVinci, SohoNet, and SohoNet were kind enough to help sponsor this event. So thanks so much for that. It's Jeff and I at the event this year. We are missing Mike.
Mike Seymour could not be with us this year, couldn't make the trip to NAB, so we'd like to give a shout out to him. You normally would see him up here.
Yeah, so Mike, we wish you were here, but he's been working really hard the last several months on the Red Dwarf project, so I think it's really great that he's holding down the fort down in Sydney. So thanks so much for that, Mike. Well, the start of the show today, the idea behind our first podcast at NAB, as usual, is to just talk about cool shit that we saw at the show.
Yep, so the first guest we have joining us is Ko Maruyama.
That's pretty good.
Did I do it right?
Yeah, that's right on the money.
All right, thank you. And you got to check out Blackmagic.
Yeah, I did. They have 17 products, which makes it really hard to say which one was the coolest. Of course, they had that huge, massive router that they had, which they doubled since last year. But one of the nice products, the little product they had, was the DVI to SDI out, which makes it really easy for something that maybe you get at FXPHD to record that screen right out to an SDI output. And it was like right around the $400 mark.
And how big is it?
It's tiny, and it has USB power right to it.
Yeah, and also they have some interesting, actually some waveform display too, which is pretty
freaking
cool.
They did. They had a new software waveform monitor, so a whole scope system.
Yeah, it's really interesting how they really kind of brought that affordability to a lot of things. And you see that in the show, just bringing those tools. I think it's quite impressive.
Well, it seems like there's just a ton of little glue boxes like that on the floor. I mean, every booth had a box for video in or out of a computer, just tons of stuff. So I didn't make it to Blackmagic, so I'm glad you did.
Yeah, it was really worth checking out. And they had so much stuff. They had so many different products there on the floor that you could go through and, you know, check out, that you'd spend definitely a few minutes. So you have to schedule your time wisely when you go to the booth.
Yeah.
Cool.
Oh, cool.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks. Do you want to say anything about MGLA?
Yeah, what are you doing actually here at the show?
I'm actually here. You know, we have our show our group meeting in Los Angeles every third Tuesday of the month. DMALA.org is the website, and people can go and sign up there.
Cool.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
I'll see you next term.
Fantastic.
Okay, thanks. Great.
Well, next up in the hot seat, thanks.
Hey, Steve. How's it going?
And now joining us is a longtime friend of FXPHD, Stu Mashewitz.
Hey, guys.
Nice to see you again.
Nice to see you as well.
This is a little comfortable. This is kind of nice.
Yeah, I like this. This is good.
Yeah. For people at home, I should describe it. We've got a couches and a chair up here on a stage.
So it's no surprise you were doing a little bit of hanging out at the Red Giant booth. You're actually speaking quite a bit at the show this week, aren't you?
Yeah, more than I had kind of planned. But I did a panel this morning, a super session about my usual subject matter, you know, the $1 million look on the $1,000 budget. We talked about shooting with DSLRs, which I've done a lot of lately. Showed my short that I shot on the 5D Mark II. And then tomorrow I will be at Red Giant Software's booth at 1 p.m. We'll be showing the short there, and I'll be signing copies. We're giving away a few copies of the DV Rebels guide.
Cool. Well, it's no surprise that I guess the first thing that you want to talk about also has a little bit of Red Giant, because you were there.
Yes, exactly. I may be biased, but I think one of the cooler things I've seen today was Peter Norby's demo at the Red Giant booth of Particular Version 2, which is a great, you know, it's one of my favorite plugins of all time. I think we all love particles. It kind of seems like something for nothing when you just set up some parameters and all this stuff starts flying around. But he's done a great job of updating what was already a feature-rich plugin with some really cool stuff. Now you can do 2D cards that don't have to face the camera, so you can spew dollar bills and have them flutter around. And he's figured out some very clever ways to do things like self-shadowing of the particles that is really fast and really smooth. And that's always the thing with Pater, is that all of his stuff is really fast and really smooth. So I definitely am a fan, and he has this kind of effortless, mellow Swedish way of demoing this stuff that went over very well today, and I highly recommend folks check it out.
And for those listening to this, we're actually going to have that featured actually on one of our FX Guy TV apps from this show, and hopefully get him to do it. We'll see if we can wrangle him to do
it. He's a little bit reclusive.
We'll get Sean to actually walk us through some of the new stuff in it. So
it's
we're looking forward to that. Yeah, it's really cool, and I know a ton of people are excited about getting a look at that. One of the other early things, I think, watching the Twitterverse this morning that came out was the other thing that you want to talk about, and that happened from the AJA booth, actually.
That's right, yeah. what is the name of the thing? It's called the Key Pro or something like that?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so I had posted some pictures of it and been Twittering about it, and I think the general response in the Twitterverse was...
underwhelming.
Yeah, it was kind of underwhelming, but I don't think... I think it's... For the folks who have actually seen it in person, I think they understand why it costs what it costs and why it's a valuable thing. For those who don't know, what it is a DVC Pro, ProRes hardware recorder, and it's got HDMI input. So they have it, you know, it's not a small box, but it's mounted under these cameras. What this thing is it's a little hardware box that that records ProRes in hardware, and it's got an HDMI input, and you can clamp it under any camera that has an HDMI out. But the nice thing is it has these little quick-release drives, and one of the complaints on Twitter was, you know, these drives are proprietary, but when you see it in person, you realize why. They're quick-release, they pop out, they're eSATA into the device, but then they have a FireWire 800 port. So the thing is, you could shoot all day onto this drive with any camera, ranging from the extreme high end to they've got it with the tiny little, you know, whatever, even the smaller than the HV20 ridiculous little Canon thing, and you can record from the uncompressed HDMI out to ProRes and hardware, pop out the drive, pop it onto your laptop, and start cutting. So to me, that's you know, and it's $4,000, but it's a professional solution. It has blinky lights and buttons and the kind of stuff that costs money to make. So it looks like a great tool.
That's great. And we're set up to do a piece on FX Guy TV for that, right?
Yeah, definitely.
So good. You'll still be able to see that on FX Guy TV if you're not here at the show.
Because you really do have to see it in person.
I think you do. Actually, I think you do have to kind of realize that it is a piece of pro gear and they're really taking it seriously. It's not just a hard drive with a cable coming out of it. You know, certainly there's a crowd of people for whom a hard drive with a cable coming out of it sounds perfect, but this thing is the real deal. It's a very nice piece of hardware.
Right. Cool.
And our next guest in the hot seat, Mark Christensen. Mark, thanks so much for being here. Coming in for your book signing tomorrow, of course.
Yes, fabulous. I am, that's right.
So what do you want to, what tales do you want to regale us with today?
I was going to give just a little mention of some guys I've been working with. DigiFX has acquired a plugin that was actually existed for After Effects a decade or so ago, when machines, Beige Macs, weren't very able to use it, offering something that has been missing from After Effects, which is essentially the equivalent of what you guys would call, I think, bicubics, which is the ability to take something 2D and bend it and warp it and displace it. And so this technology has resurfaced as a DigiFX freeform plugin. I'm helping them out a little bit with some tutorials, which I actually owe them, so I'm trying to help pay them back, actually, by giving them a little plug. But it's obviously a hugely useful addition to After Effects if you want to do warpy, flying, clothy, blowing things like one might... But like you guys make your living off of, right? That's pretty much
exactly
what you guys do.
Yeah, it's been one of the things in Flame we use
just
a lot.
Just make some dollar bills fly around, and we'll give you some more dollar bills for doing it, right?
Exactly.
$100 bills. Yeah.
Well, that's fantastic. So, and again, I jestfully mentioned about the book, but why don't you tell us a little bit about the book that came out rather recently, I guess.
Yeah, it came out at the end of last year. And
your class at PhD that you're doing this term.
I'm doing a class that is based on it, which is really great for me because, you know, a book lets you go deep into something and write something in a way where if people need to, they can come back and look at it again. But you can really do a whole different set of stuff with videos, basically with a class. I mean, doing FX PhD is even something else again, because you can also interact with the people as opposed to doing a training video. But a lot of these things show really well, and one is not a replacement for the other, and nor is one a prerequisite for the other. But yeah, I'm doing a little book signing tomorrow, so I'm hoping people will show up. Is this going to go out by then or no?
Yeah, it'll be out by then.
Okay, please come by Tuesday, noon. Come by and say hi. You don't have to buy a book to say hello. Don't
you're
be
gonna
shy.
Go to the, you're going
to
do the Borders tour and Barnes
yeah,
& Noble
Borders
after
tour.
That?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Cool.
Yeah. All right.
Well, cool. Well, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it, Mark.
Okay, our next guest, Peter Webb.
Now, Peter is a guy who's known way more about Flame than I've forgotten.
Yes, exactly.
You know, or
Peter
he's forgotten
from
more
Melbourne,
about Flame. I botched
a longtime friend.
More than I've
Peter
ever
got
learned.
To spend
Sorry.
Some time at the Foundry booth.
Hi, guys.
How's it going?
Good, good. Firstly, a shout out to Mike Seymour.
Definitely.
Course, because a very dear friend can't be here, and we wish he was. But
yes, for
I'm
certain.
Mike. So, yeah, my main mission here really was to research a bit about stereoscopic feature film production. So I made an appointment to go and see the Ocular guys down at the Foundry, and they were generous enough to talk me through the feature set of that product as it is at the moment. And it's kind of what I was expecting, I guess. It's just a bunch of really useful tools for dealing with left and right camera information. And given that in normal film production, we like to just deal with one stream of information, it makes it as much as possible like that. So you just have to deal with one, and it interpolates and interrogates the footage and helps you deal with both channels as if they were one channel.
So what kind of demand are you seeing yet for this? You're at Allura in Melbourne. What kind of demand are you seeing? Are you kind of preparing to be asked to do this at some point? Or
pretty much. Say? We haven't done a stereo project yet, but almost every single script we do now is a stereo, going to be a stereo project. Everyone seems to be into it, and whether for good or bad, that's something we're going to have to deal with.
Right.
So we're actively trying to work out what the issues are going to be before we hit the ground, which is kind of impossible, but at least knowing what the tools are, we'll be ahead of the game if possible.
Yeah,
very cool. We also went to the Foundry booth today and saw a lot of people have problems with rolling shutter with some of the consumer cameras and some of the higher end cameras, and they don't have a product for dealing with rolling shutter, but the Foundry's got some technology that they're showing in a private booth to remove rolling shutter artifacts. Rolling shutter is where the CMOS chip scans, and you end up with skewing when the camera's panning. Anyway, they've got a tool, and they can show you if you ask them. And they're looking for feedback. They want to know what we want done about this. I mean, they basically made this tool to make it easier for them to 3D track. Because if the picture's jello or skewing, yeah, it makes it really hard to 3D track, besides being visually disturbing in some shots. A lot of the DSLRs with movie mode have this artifact pretty heavily.
Yes.
And anyway, we're going to do a piece on FX Guide TV showing it. And if you're at the show, and you can go see it at the Foundry booth and give them some feedback on it. They're trying to figure out what to do. Do we want to correct the problem, or do we want to get the data and then apply that data to what we're adding to the shot? You know, they want to talk about that. So go see the guys at the Foundry. It was
Excellent.
Cool to get a peek into the lab. You know, we don't get that very often these days.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Well, cool. Thanks so much, Peter. Again, so fantastic to have you in the States. It's great.
It's been entirely my pleasure.
Wearing some of the old classic spec T-shirts, of
That's
course,
right.
as well. So another guy who, a friend of ours, involved in stereo, Jeff Holm, who's done some courses for us at FXPHD, or done a course for us at FXPHD. First, why don't you just, let's talk about your stereo chops and what you just, well, fairly recently finished working on.
Just finished Monsters vs. Aliens, which is still in theaters. I urge you to take your kids.
This is brilliant and fun stereo ride. Actually,
yeah.
I think animated feature films are actually a really smart use of stereo technology.
Yeah. You know, Pixar has Up coming up, which I can, you know, actually plug the competition, but Disney has 17 stereo features, combo, live action, and 3D in their pipeline. So there's actually quite a bit of work out there. And, you know, to the students and the community in general, you know, I have to say, you know, if you get your stereo chops going, there actually is work out there. And I know that the vendors are all, you know, really interested in, you know, hey, where's the market for this? And, you know, Disney, Pixar, DreamWorks, Blue Sky, you know, all have the animation market kind of sewn up, but there's also a lot of live action stuff. And there's no better work than fixing up screwed up stereo for, in live action and combining CG with live action. So there's really a lot of work out there if you put the time into it. So, you know, some of the things that I saw at the show today, the Nuke stuff is obviously very impressive.
Yep.
I did see a Sony monitor that was really impressive, that was a 42-inch monitor that was brighter than anything that I had seen previously. So, you know, there's a lot of good stuff to see at the show, a lot of good LCD monitors there, a lot of cool 3D stuff. Silhouette was another package at, like, you know, 900 or so. That's a stereo roto tool that's, you know, pretty efficient for that. But, you know, I'm riding the stereo wave, and I'm going to, you know, keep riding it till stereo falls off the map, and we'll see when that is.
I would actually be really interested. I'd like to see a good stereo live action film before I give my real judgment on whether it's going to be work for that. I mean, I think gaming, we talked about gaming, works really well. I think animated feature, like Coraline, was beautiful. Monsters, of course, really brilliant. But we need to see a really good story told in stereo and used to tell the story, actually, I think.
You know what? I think everybody's waiting for that, and Jim Cameron is probably, if you're in Los Angeles and you're in the market, there's probably some 3D stereo shots to be had that are probably being shopped around town right now. So, you know, the Avatar stuff is really going to be the biggest thing that's really going to set the stereo. It's going to be story with fantastic images, and everybody's looking forward to that.
You can't have a conversation about stereo without somebody saying, and I'm really waiting to see Avatar. It seems to be that everybody's, you know...
Why not? You know, as, you know what? Titanic was still one of our favorite pictures to work on and is still the biggest box office extravaganza of all time. So,
right.
You know what? It's going to be up to Jim Cameron to bring it home.
Well, next up, we've got another FX PhD prof and net celebrity, John Flowers.
Hello.
How's it going, John? Good to see you. Good to finally actually meet you.
Yeah, we met for the first time today.
Yeah, it was actually nice to feel like... I know you, but now I actually do know you. But I actually wanted to have you talk about something that's actually not on the show floor, but actually something you're involved with.
Oh, okay.
A cool little tool.
Oh, yeah.
You come up with.
HD speed test.
We'll do something more in-depth on FX Guide TV, but if we could just do a quick overview for people.
Sure, yeah.
There's been a lot of internet chatter.
So I created this tool that at first sounds a little bit like a semantic argument. It sounds a little bit like just a nuance that you wouldn't pay attention to. But it turns out that other tools, which measure the speed of your computer and how many video streams and how many things they can handle, aren't actually measuring your computer and the way it would handle a codec. They're just measuring how your computer would read and write a binary file. And so it turns out that if you want to know how many streams of, say, HDV footage you can handle at once, that's the wrong tool to use. So I wrote this tool after a lot of work trying to figure out how Final Cut actually reads and writes codecs. I wrote this tool that actually reads and writes actual codecs that you choose and tells you how fast your computer is and how quickly it can read and write and capture those codecs. And it's free. It's free as in freedom.
Well, but that's really interesting because, again, you get those, you get those hardware tests where it is effectively testing, like in the Blackmagic, will give you a data rate on what's being...
Right.
But it is kind of meaningless when you try and start trouble, especially when you start trying to troubleshoot things of why you're not getting the performance that you expect.
Right, and you have to realize that between you and your camera and your drive, there's this application. Mm-hmm. And you have to ask yourself, well, what is that application doing? So I go from my awesome Sony EX1, do HDSDI out, plug it into my AJA or AJA card, and then I capture, you know, uncompressed 1080p 444, and I'm like, great, I did this benchmark, and my drive supposedly does enough, you know, speed to do that. Well, yeah, your drive does, but what about the software that's between that, you know, AJA card and your drive? And that's what I'm measuring.
Right, that's really
cool. How fast that software is.
Where can people find this software?
Unscale.com, just UNSCALE, Unscale.
Perfect. And we'll do a piece on FX Guide TV to show you.
Yeah.
People can actually see the screen running, but they can download it and try it themselves. But we'll do with you explaining it, and that'll be great.
Cool. And I like Flare. I think it's cool. I love the idea of running something without the hardware.
Cool.
It is. It's still, definitely a minimum hardware configuration. But it's interesting talking, and you have this initial shock, I think, at the price tag.
Yeah.
And talking about Flare that people had.
It's like $40,000.
Yeah,
right?
And we talked, I think, in the end of it, talking about people maybe expecting to be priced the same as other desktop tools and so forth, which I think was
people are like, Nuke
naive.
Is $5,000. What's going on?
Yeah.
Right.
And,
or 10. I don't know how much Nuke is.
Right.
And I think that in the end, talking to some people today who have huge facilities with, say, a lot of flames in them, it's actually a really attractive product to keep current and upgrade their old hardware. You know, they've got a lot of IBM workstations around. They can actually upgrade several of their ones to Flame and then have Flare on these other workstations.
Absolutely.
So for a bigger facility, I think it makes a lot of sense. I still think it could be a little lower in price. But I think there is a certain thing you want to keep the people who paid the premium for Flame happy.
Yeah.
And from my standpoint, I'm hoping someday that they let you have it with a smoke.
Right.
As well.
But I talked to a couple of people who own lots of flames, several flames, and they were kind of like, I think it's too expensive. I was like, well, but I think the idea is to kind of protect you a little bit. I mean, even though you have to have a flame license, you know, you don't want somebody down the street buying one flame license and then 20. I mean, it's I don't know.
Right.
It's interesting. There's a lot of opinions about it. Not many in this room. I tried to get people to talk earlier. But.
Yeah, and there's also some interesting stuff. Just we talked a lot about Flare and the effects products, but actually I just want to give, for smoke people listening out there, there's some real improvements in this recent release because, again, you think of smoke as a product that's hubbing a facility. Before it leaves a facility, the stuff comes in and gets sent out in the different formats. And so I've done some interesting stuff in the recapture module, which has been kind of hit my head against the wall a lot of times working with it because it doesn't find the footage, it's not reformatting, but they've really done a nice job of kind of redefining how you go from loading your XML to recapturing, reformatting, and then relinking it to what you need. It's much less error prone. There's still problems and things you have to deal with. I mean, when you're working in a multi-format world, things are complex. I mean, so it makes sense. But they've really done a nice job from that end. We kind of neglected that in the first FX Guide TV that went up, and I just wanted to let people know there was some good stuff in smoke.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. Well, thanks, John.
Sure.
And again, good to have you back this term teaching another course. So.
Yeah, I'm happy to be teaching it.
Yeah, I was really excited that you pinged me about that. It's always kind of like dating almost, where it's like you have someone who does a really good class, and it comes out well, and you're like, can I ask him if he wants to do one next term and stuff? So I was really happy again that you joined
us. Happy to be part of it.
Well, thanks
so much.
Happy
to finally meet you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, so joining us now are two Johns. And let me introduce themselves so you can hear their voices and figure out which one's which. Let's start with...
Hi, I'm John Riberich.
And?
John Morales.
Okay, let's talk to John Riberich first. You guys attended the sessions today, and that's something we've never had a time at NAB to cover. Obviously, we try to cover some of those at SIGGRAPH. But I want to get your impressions on which session did you attend?
I attended most of the 3D sessions. The one I found most interesting was the Pixar session, where they basically just kind of went through how they approached 3D in their storytelling, showed a lot of footage of Wall-E and Ratatouille, and some previews of Up.
And how was the screens? I mean, what was it set up?
It was a special 4K Sony projector that had a very high... a very high brightness value, and that's one of the things they talked about a lot was the amount of brightness they were able to get out of this projector was much higher than the values they're able to get in the theater right now, and that brightness is a big deal. I mean, I've got a little bit of experience with stereoscopic work myself up at IMAX a while back.
Well, brightness is a big factor, I assume.
Brightness and contrast are a huge factor because it's how the human visual system works with depth perception. So they talked about that to a great deal. They talked about the fact they went to some biologists and talked. And basically, everybody's kind of was trying to figure out how to make it work for them, right? So they had their own way of kind of figuring it out and their own way of talking about how stereo works and where they're going to place things in 3D and how to make things work impactfully, not strain your eyes too much, and right. all the things that a lot of us that have done work in stereoscopic have to deal with or have to think about. But one of the things you and I talked about before the
right,
session...
Right, you've had a fair amount of experience in stereoscopic.
Yeah, one of the things you and I talked about before the session was that everybody's kind of come up with their own terminology. Everybody's writing their own book as they go on stereo. So Pixar's doing their thing, and DreamWorks is doing their own thing, and when I was at IMAX, we had our own terminology and ways of working with this material, and ways of talking about it, ways of kind of figuring out how to make things work. And there really isn't a standard way of dealing with it. Everybody's kind of trying to figure out how to fit it into story, how to fit it. That's what Pixar talked about a lot today, was using it to serve story. But a lot of us are trying to figure out the technology, right? That's why we're here. So,
and wasn't there some talk about, just in general, projection has been an issue over the years? Somebody was telling me something about that. They talked a little bit about that?
Yeah.
Didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, as John had mentioned over here, that brightness is definitely one of the biggest issues. They've solved a lot of the problems that used to be a physical problem with projections, because it was just a physical medium and you'd have alignment issues and stuff like that. The Real D system makes it a lot more easier to have in a smaller market.
Right.
And that is one thing that that's what they were showing on,
right.
Was a 4K Real D system.
Right.
The one thing that I found very interesting from 3Reality and on Pixar was they had solved a lot of the major issues that seemed to be impossible just 5 years ago. Long cross dissolves, fast, rapid jump cuts and things like that, that you would have thought that the difference in depth would have created strain on the eyes.
Yeah, it's always
and,
been an issue.
Some of the stuff they were showing really looked like, you have to take care to a certain degree, but they've solved technically a lot of those problems.
Interesting. Going back to the workflow a little bit, it's interesting to me that as an industry, and we've done a little bit of coverage of this in the stories lately, and we've got some more in mind for coming up, that, here's a part of the business that's refiguring, and people are on each project and each facility and each doing different workflows. Same thing's happening with the switch to digital cinema, the on-set data. It seems like there's a lot of... It's just a really churny time in the business. Lots of stuff changing and lots of people reinventing the same wheel.
Yeah, it's almost like we're going from black and white to color or no sound to talkies, all over again. And I think it's really interesting, I think, as an artist who works in these areas and an educator as well, as I am now, it's an exciting time to be working in this stuff because there is a lot of language that has to be written for it and a lot of ways of dealing with this stuff that are going to serve what we do as digital filmmakers and artists and people who work with these media. I mean, it's just the very beginning of this stuff. We're in the wind-up radio era of all this stuff.
And then smell-o-vision.
Yeah.
and just in talking to Peter Webb earlier, we were talking this weekend to him too, it is one of those tools in the storytelling process. So it even applies to live action. I mean, you don't just... In some ways, they are just throwing stereo in to do stereo, I would say, cynically, possibly.
Yes.
But it could, as we learn to use these tools, how can it be used to tell the story better? And I think that's the critical stuff that everyone's kind of learning and figuring out at this point.
It was a big part of what they talked about today. They actually had a really interesting chart they showed of all the shots. And they had a bar graph that showed how much depth there was in the shot. And basically, they think about that way and how they serve the story about how much depth there is in the shots and how they give you breaks with it. And the close-up shots are always kind of flat. And they talk about the plane, where letting the plane fall on the eyes of the character, because we're naturally, as humans, we look at things. And so it was some really smart thinking. Obviously, there's some smart guys up there. And, they're doing some cool stuff. And it was also a very small team on the stereo part of Up. That was also pretty impressive.
Yeah, I think seven guys. Yeah, supervising stereoscopic.
Yeah, I mean, of course, it was seven guys attached to the Pixar pipeline, so let's be realistic about that.
Right.
One other thing they had mentioned was for Toy Story and Toy Story 2, was pulling out assets back from 1995 and how important it was to keep track of those assets. And it's something that today I think about what assets I use. It's all in my head. Some of it is on screen, some of it's recorded, but... It's something that we all should be thinking about if we're going to be repurposing assets, especially if we might be moving it to 3D eventually. It's something that you didn't worry about in film so much, but definitely in digital, it's a whole another problem.
It sure is. Yeah, there's a great article recently about the whole effort to recover NASA images. I don't know if you saw that, but I mean, it's just a fascinating story. If you haven't, just do some Googling if you haven't seen the article. It's a great story about a woman's fight to keep these tapes, and they've started to pull images off these old tape decks now, higher res than we've ever seen from the early moon missions. So it's an issue that affects other industries, but our industry, it's going to be more and more, especially as these movies do get converted to 3D. Sure. Well, thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah, thanks so much. It's interesting to hear something where we've actually haven't really attended those in the past or now.
So it's good to hear that.
There's some really compelling content that they're adding to the NAB show for people like us.
Cool.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks as well.
All right, joining us now is Brian Scott. And one of the things we like to do at NAB, and in one of the FX Guide TVs, we try to do this every year at the trade shows, is look at some of the stuff that's a little different, the back corners of the hall, and find something that may or may not be right along with us. So you saw something pretty interesting today that you brought to my attention.
I did. I was very surprised. Maxell, who is known as a tape supplier, I've used lots of their product over the years, has kind of gotten proactive, and not only have they come out with an entire line of P2 cards and flash cards and stuff to combat the decline of the tape industry, but they were also showing a hard drive solution for recording.
Is it hard drive or solid state?
You can get it in either configuration.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But the thing that was different about it, from my standpoint, was that first of all, it was practically indestructible. You could turn a fire hose on the thing and it would still function. The other thing is that they'd really thought about the whole workflow pipeline, and you could take the hard drive that fit onto the camera was in a sled essentially, and the hard drive would then come out. And you could plug it into the same kind of a sled to plug it into your editing system. Or you could put it into a RAID array and have six or eight of these playing back all at the same time. So you could really keep the system running rather than just having one unit that you took out in the field and then you had to bring in to edit with it.
Wow.
So you had to have a second one to take out in the field. So they'd really thought about the entire workflow, which was quite impressive.
Right. Cool. And what did you get the price on it?
I want to say that they were saying that the kind of sled unit was in the $600 range, and the drives themselves were $600-$700, somewhere in that range. So it was actually kind of less than a Firestore or something of that caliber.
Okay, cool. Well, thanks very much.
You bet.
Well, thanks so much. And that kind of draws us to the end of our guest appearances today. Wrapping up our podcast. Before we close out, I again want to thank the sponsors of our event here because, this is, I would not imagine to have an event like this. Really great turnout, really a lot of fun, a lot of good people, but thanks to DaVinci, the Foundry, and SohoNet for making this possible. I mean, it's really, really great that they helped us out with this.
And again, Jackie Piper helped us out quite a bit with the door, and Dave Edgar helped us from FXPhD organize.
Talk a little bit more about some of the stuff that we're going to be covering on FX Guide TV. Our hope is we'll have at least one episode, probably two episodes, based upon the number of interviews we've done.
Yeah.
But we went by and had a couple really good artist kind of features. Those of you who watch our stuff on FX Guide TV kind of remember the one we did with the Mummy from IBC. And we went to the booth today and record a couple things with Dav from the Orphanage, or formerly from the Orphanage, Greg from Intelligent Creatures, and we'll be rolling those out. Really cool hardcore compositing tips and tricks and stuff, so it's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to go to the AJ booth and check out the stuff, Matrox, Red Giant Particular.
We
really got a lot of stuff planned coming up in the rest of the week from here, but check that out on FX Guide.
Cool, and again, a shout out to Mike Seymour.
You know what? It's
so weird being here without him.
It's the first year he hasn't been here at NAB. It's also the first year the three of us actually worked together on a job. So
yeah, the Red Dwarf Project, three of us,
So again, Mike, we miss you. Wish you were up here, but again, I think it's, after all the hard work you did, it's cool that you're hanging out in Sydney. And again, you've been posting a lot and helping out a ton behind the scenes.
We get flooded with press releases this time of year, and we're usually too busy to even look at them once the show starts. So he's been popping those up, so that's been good.
And, of course, again, thanks to all the FX PhD members who came today and came to the event. All the FX PhD profs who were here, really large number of them made it out. So, again, good to see everyone out here, as well as everyone from the Foundry and SohoNet. Like VES had a lot of people from the members of VES.
Yeah, a lot of VES members, right. Thanks.
Great.
Thanks for coming.
Please let us know if you have any suggestions for stories or future podcasts. You can reach us by using the Contact Us links at the top of the homepage. This podcast is copyright 2008 FX Guide LLC. Broadcast or redistribution is prohibited without the expressed written consent of FX Guide